It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. Welcome back to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you guys here. And, you know, there's a lot of huge things happening across the states. We've seen some big shakeups there where it comes to, we'd call it minimum wage. More and more states are jumping on the minimum wage bandwagon, if you will. And our first guest today is none other than one of our regular contributors, Norm Blumenthal. And Norm Blumenthal is kind of the attorney that represents working class tips like you and I, people who sometimes need a little bit of assistance making sure that our voice is heard. Norm Blumenthal, attorney for the Workers and Consumers of America. Welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Nice to be back. Got 6 months to go until the election, November 2nd. So everybody's going to have to start tuning in here and figuring out who they're going to vote for in the upcoming November election. The last of the primaries are coming up, and it looks like it's going to be Trump and Clinton going at it toe-to-toe. So it's going to be interesting, nice for us to see. There's a real difference there. And from a labor standpoint, Trump is pro-management. He wants to keep labor costs down as low as possible. And Clinton is pro-labor, and she's going to be working for increasing minimum wages, taking away these exemptions from overtime pay. So the choices are clear. If you want to put more money in your pocket, I think Clinton's going to be the one to vote for in the next election for all the working stiffs out there. So it's just a question of putting more money in your pocket. The economy, President Obama created 14 million jobs in the 8 years or 7 years plus now that he's been in office, and there's something to be said for that. And California is now past the minimum wage increase, heading for $15, and so is New York. And that's where all the jobs are. And so away we go. And so it's
absolutely
interesting.
Well, you know what? And here's what's interesting, too. You and I have had a couple of discussions about a billionaire. His name is Nick Hanauer. He's an entrepreneur, venture capitalist. He's a big time supporter of the minimum wage. He's also a big supporter of better working conditions, for lack of better terms, better treatment. And what I find interesting is, again, this guy, you would think he would be pro-management, but he's pro-labor. And you know, him and you know, there's a couple of standouts like Warren Buffett who have also said, hey, it's about time, you know, that we make some changes here. And I think that you know, there was an article sent over by your office that him and Robert Reich wrote for the New York Times talking about not only that, but also talking about, you know, how the Department of Labor is introducing new rules to restore overtime pay to literally millions of Americans. You know, people just don't realize that a little bit here and a little bit there has been taken away, where, you know, overtime pay taken away from literally millions of people. And now we're starting to see, I guess, some of that coming back. My point being to all that is that it's not just you and I talking about this. It's also people who you would think would be pro-management but are also pro-labor. Again, like these billionaires. It's everybody is saying this is the right thing to do. Now is the right time to do it.
Yeah, and the reason is, you know, they're, these people are not stupid. The reason is because they know at the end of the day, you put more money in the hands of the working stiffs, they're going to spend it. Put
yes.
more money in the hands of billionaires, they can't spend it. So it's good business. to put more money. You know, we had, you know, according to the Economic Policy Institute, there'll be 13.5 million more workers in this country if we had stronger overtime laws. And the overtime laws were created just like the child labor laws, which, you know, I think a lot of Republicans would like to do away with both because they could hire kids and basically not pay them even the $7.25 in most of this country that they're getting now. So in any event, but what ends up happening is because of these overtime laws, the they have to hire more people because they don't want to pay time and a half. That's the purpose of it, is to encourage more employment. And what we've gone from is we've gone from a 40-hour average work week in this country now to a 47-hour average work week. And 18% of the people that reported working more than 60 hours a week. That gives you no time for your family and no time for your kids if you're working stiff. And these are tough jobs. These are not jobs, you know, where you get into an office and you sit in a chair. These are long, tough, grueling jobs at 60 hours a week that people are having to work because they call them management. And this is all going to end under the proposed rules where they're going to take the base out, take it up from $23,600 a year to $50,440 a year. And that's going to take all these people, 13 million people, out of the exempt category from overtime, put them into the overtime category, and that's what the result's going to be. There's going to be jobs for everybody, and it's going to bring back the people that aren't looking for jobs. They're going to start looking, and this economy is going to take off. It's going to boom. We're on the right track, and we just got to stay the course. That's exactly what they're trying to tell you, and we got to turn around the idea that this country's built just on corporate profits. What's happened in the last 30 years is the corporate profits have increased by 6% of GDP. Well, GDP is, you know, you're talking almost $18 trillion a year. And wages have declined 6% of GDP. So you're talking about 6% of $18 trillion. You know, you're talking about $6, $7 trillion to be spread around amongst a lot of people who end up buying more things and causing more people to be hired.
Well, you know what? And I know I'm going to go off on the, what do you call it, a little weird here. This is going to sound strange for people. But, you know, some of these people are actually going to be able to save for retirement. I know it's kind of a weird concept. But, you know, you have to have – today you just need more. I mean, you look at California. You're in California, you know. Living in California, if you're making 70 grand a year and you happen to be a single parent, how do you make ends meet?
It's you know, it's tough for these people, and they have to do it. You know, we have a good community college system out here because education is the key, Bert. You know, at the end of the day, we don't – this idea that the Trumpster's coming up with of bringing back – you know, lousy $7 an hour jobs from Mexico is silly. We don't want those jobs. We want jobs in the new industries, the solar industries, and the electric car industries, and the things in the roads industries. All these things that we're going to build, the new electric grid. All of these are the jobs we're going to want in this country, and it's going to take a good education, and it's going to take a system that. That Clinton's in favor of and Bernie's in favor of, the idea of getting people back into school and staying in school. The power and the thing that everybody has to emphasize is education. That's the number one priority in this country because this is the greatest country in the world, and to keep it that way, we need to have the best educated population in this country, and we're on our way. I'm very positive about where we're going.
I am too. And here's something else that I want to use as an example. This has been brought up multiple times. You look at Costco that pays an average of, I think, $17 an hour for their employees. And when you go to Costco, there's a lot of friendly people there to help you. And then you check out Walmart, who I think their average is like, right under $8, or maybe it's $8.05 an hour, and you go to Walmart, and it's just a completely different experience. They have more or less the same margins. They more or less sell the same products, but yet it's a night and day experience. And I think that Walmart, which is a multi-billion dollar entity, and their what do you call it? The people who own Walmart are multi-billionaires, need to look at this dichotomy here, that they're, you know, one of their competitors is showing you that you can pay your workers a livable wage, give them what do you call it, benefits, and still make money.
That's exactly right. And what Walmart's trying to do, it's living off their government has what's called the earned income tax credit, where they have
right.
the low end of the payment scale. We, you and I, and everybody else working that pays taxes, we subsidize Walmart paying these low wages because the government gives back to these workers any income tax they may have to pay. So we're subsidizing that. We want to obviously give people a base pay, and that's a good thing, the earned income tax credit. That's a good thing, and we're not arguing against it. But we want the companies themselves to be in there paying more. And that's why, in addition to the earned income tax credit, you need to increase the minimum wage across this country. A rising tide will float all ships. You and I have talked about that. We're talking about the velocity of money. Money moving. And
yes.
we want it moving in a good way to buy goods and services. We don't want it moving in a bad way where it ends up paying just for gasoline to drive your car. And in the end, it ends up, you know, in the oil company's hands. That doesn't move money. Money has to move through the system multiple times. And when you stop at the gas station, that's where your money stops there, I'm telling you. But when it goes into a store like Costco and Walmart and Burger King and McDonald's and all the other big chains and small businesses, it moves the money, especially in the local economy. All economics is local.
Yes.
And every community is going to have to needs to get itself in a position where it has companies that are attracting the educated, are bringing forth new goods and services into the community. Remember, the world economy now is in the internet. You can
yes.
live in Timbuktu and you could be selling goods all over the world. So it doesn't matter where you live or where you are, but when the money comes back, it comes back to your local community. And that's the beauty of our economy that we're living in today. And the idea that automation is going to get rid of your jobs, it's not going to get rid of your jobs. It's going to change jobs, just like the blacksmith is gone and he's now the auto service mechanic. When the auto service mechanic, he's going to be gone too. We're going to have
right.
electric cars. You're not going to need that guy anymore, and he's going to end up putting solar panels on and servicing these solar panels and serving the electric grid because it's going to be bigger and better than ever.
Yes,
that's where we're headed.
And you know what? And I want to go back to what you said about education. So yes, there is a change, a revolution, if you will, that is coming. And so back to what you said earlier about having an educated workforce. You know, years ago, we saw what happened when in Detroit, when people were displaced because they had these robots come in and were able to do the job. Some of these workers, the ones who were open to change were, re-educated. They were given an opportunity in that company or in different industries to use their old skills versus and as well as their new skills and put that life experience to work for them. And then you had people who sat there and complained about the unfairness of it all. Well, you know, change is inevitable. It's going to happen again. And so now's the time to be prepared for that. I just wanted to throw that out there because what you said is true. Today, your job may change. What are you going to do about it? Now is the time to get ready.
You're exactly right, and that's the whole point. The Trumpster, he comes out and starts complaining about carrier air conditioning. I don't know if you've seen his talk. Carrier air conditioning, the major manufacturing plant, is in Indiana. They're closing,
right.
But Indiana's booming because of all the new, better jobs that are there in Indiana for people to take. They don't need carrier air conditioning jobs. Send those jobs to Mexico. When these small, low-paying jobs go out, then you don't have the immigration problem that people are complaining about, because these other countries have those jobs where they can live there and their economy can grow and they can buy our products and things can get good around the world. It doesn't just happen to happen in one place. And we are on the edge of the new economy. You know, the Trumpster's trying to save the old economy. It is basically a Trojan horse. He's feeding everybody fear instead of feeding everybody hope. And we have to do is get rid of the fear and come up with the hope. President Obama, he's given us a pathway, and we need to continue on that pathway. And Clinton is the one that's going to keep us going with these increase in jobs, increase in productivity, increase in gross domestic product, and an increase in salaries. If we lose this election and the Trumpster gets in, he's never going to allow the overtime laws that are proposed now to come into effect. Because he understands from a management standpoint, their job is to keep salaries as low as possible. That's their job. It's an adversary system. We are in an adversary system. If you are a worker in America today, you got to be felony stupid if you don't vote for the Democrats. We've always said that, because that's where your money is going to lie. That's where your productivity is going to lie. That's where your children's education is going to lie. It's not going to lie with management that wants to keep salaries low, wages low, and profits high.
Absolutely. You know what? And we've also, I'm a big believer, and I know that you are too, that you have to vote with your pocketbook. That's what companies do. They vote with their pocketbook. And that's what we as working class citizens need to do is vote with your pocketbook and see who is going to put more money in your pocket. And that's, to me, the bottom line. It doesn't matter anything else. Is who's going to put more money in your pocket? Norm, we're out of time, but I want to do a quick shout out here. If you have questions about what's happening maybe with your company as far as overtime pay, or maybe you feel something is funky there and you need some you need to talk to somebody, you can reach out to Norm Blumenthal's team at bamlawca.com. That's BAM, BAMlawca.com. Norm Blumenthal and his team will talk to you and let you and point you in the right direction if they can't help you. Norm Blumenthal, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thanks, Bert. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
All right. Good stuff there from attorney Norm Blumenthal about what's happening with overtime laws, how they affect you, and what you can do about it. And as always, you know what? I like the fact that Norm understands the fact that, look, if you're into management, management has a different position than labor does. And not that one's better than the other, not that one's right and one's wrong. They both have objectives that they're trying to reach, and it's up to people to get in there and vote for what you believe is going to be the best thing for you. But not voting is absolutely the worst thing you can do. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this. Maybe we're not going to take a break. I don't know.
My name is Peter Shanklin, and I have a new book coming out called Zombie Loyalists, Using Great Service to Create Rabid Fans. If you go to a restaurant and you eat there and they really like you and you go back a lot and they treat you really well, maybe buy you a free drink and you bring friends and all you want to do is go to that place and that's the restaurant you go to all the time, you're a zombie loyalist for that restaurant. In my new book, I'm going to show you how to create zombie loyalists for your business, whatever kind of business that is. You're going to create customers who are so in love with you, they want to do your PR, they want to do your marketing, and they want to do your advertising for you. Remember, when you tell the world how awesome you are, no one believes you. But when someone else tells the world how awesome you are, everyone believes it. I'm going to show you how to be awesome to those customers so they bring you more and more customers and driving your revenue through the roof. Sales are going to explode. Customers are going to explode. Everyone is going to love you. This book will change what you think about your customers, how you treat them, and how you do business. It's going to be a wild ride. Everyone loves zombies. Buckle up.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All righty, we are back. My next guest, Aaron Andrews. Andrew Ahrens. How's that? Andrew Ahrens is the founder and managing partner of Synergy Advisory Management Group. He's a registered financial consultant, a certified senior advisor, a member of the National Ethics Bureau, and a licensed securities and insurance professional who holds a Series 7, 63, and 65 licenses. He graduated from Emory University in 1988 and has been recognized as one of the 10 leaders of independent wealth managers of New Jersey. In 2007 through 2015, as published in the New York Times, and has been named a 2011 and 2015 five-star wealth manager as published in the New Jersey Monthly. Andrew Ahrens, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Glad to be with you today.
You know what? I think this is such an important topic. I think that, Andrew, our society, and I think in general, has a kind of a love-hate relationship with money, and sometimes we get, overwhelmed with information out there about our money.
Right. People definitely get overwhelmed with money. Very, very important, especially, as you approach retirement.
Let's talk about that real quick. Talk about waiting an extra year will really benefit your retirement. Talk about that. How does waiting an extra year benefit your nest egg?
Well, I mean, if you wait an extra year, you are definitely being able to put extra money away. You're actually working longer, and you need to withdraw less for your retirement. You have a couple of components working for you. You have compounded interest working for you. You have the opportunity to become a saver. You also have larger Social Security checks that come to you as well. One more year working with regards to Social Security, the way that they calculate Social Security, they use the 35 years in which you earned your highest salary. So the chances are if you work an extra year before retirement, your salary will be higher than it was earlier when you first started in your career, which means it will factor into the calculation of how they pay you out. And instead of putting a zero into your average, they basically will add in what you made the last year. The second way is working an extra year before retirement can impact your Social Security is based on your age. So if you start taking your payments at your full retirement age, which is 66, which is where most baby boomers will take their monthly payments, that is reduced than if they were to wait till age 70. The longer you wait, the higher the increase is from Social Security. So by waiting an extra year could give you an extra, 8% a year the longer you wait.
Yeah, that's interesting. Just that extra year, I love the way, that works out. You wait this extra year or whatever, maybe two, and all of a sudden you're getting the benefit of a higher Social Security check. You're, as you mentioned, you're getting more compounded interest. You're able to save longer and all that other stuff. But it's kind of a nice little benefit there. You wait an extra year, and all of a sudden you're eligible, or you're possibly getting bigger Social Security checks. That in itself is a pretty nice incentive, along with your retirement money.
Right. I mean, the main thing that people don't want to mess up on is losing money, having, their allocation in their IRA account too aggressive, because what you don't want to have happen before you start withdrawing money in retirement is have the, a real negative market. And, they have this sequence of returns that, even though the markets may do well in some years, it can go down big in some years as well. So you want to make sure that you don't take a big hit. People that were looking to retire in 2008, if they had most of their money in equities, well, I can tell you they probably had to delay their retirement, not because they wanted to, but because the fact that, they lost a lot of money. So what people don't seem to realize is that if the market goes down 25%, even if you lose 20% in the market, you need 25% to make up the gain. The same thing is the market goes down 30%, you need 43% to make up, for the recovery and what you lost. So it's very, very important for people to get their finances in order, understand where their money is positioned as they get close to retirement. But if you, you know, have a nice allocation with regards to your risk tolerance and you're able to live with that, what's nice about it is if you wait the extra year, you've got a little bit of a nest egg. Just give you an example, if you have $250,000 in your retirement account and the market earns a 5% return, well, now you have an extra $12,500, you know, that would be available for withdrawals down the road. So it's very important that people understand that they need to really look at where things are at and to make sure that they don't have all their eggs in one basket, which could be the stock market, so they don't, you know, take a big loss prior
right.
to retirement.
You know, talk about this real quick. You know, this asset allocation, how important is that? When you're talking to a client, how important is that for my retirement or your retirement or for anybody's retirement?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, when the markets are going well, seem to be a little bit more aggressive. And then when the markets all of a sudden, you know, start to become volatile, they get nervous. But
right.
I think you need to really plan ahead and say, you know, right before I retire, you know, I'm going to take a little bit of the risk off the table so I'm not put in an unfortunate situation where, you know, the market doesn't cooperate, you know, and I'm not able to retire because of the performance in the markets. I don't think anyone should get into that kind of a situation. One of the things, you know, that I talked about on a prior show is one of the things that we look at is today happens to be the beginning of May. First day in the market, you know, there's that old adage, you know, sell in May and go away. You know, people should look at the statistics because sometimes, you know, the market has posted really, really nice returns between November and May and tend to be a lot more volatile and not do as well between May and November. So with some of our clients, we're a little bit more positioned in the equity markets between November and May, and then we take it down a notch a little bit between May and November. Just something, you know, that people should think of, because you really don't want to have, like I said, all your money in the market. And right now with interest rates being so low, a lot of people are taking on a lot more risk than they think they actually are in the markets.
Let's talk about this real quick. You know, because again, because of your background, is there a way for an average layperson like myself, I obviously don't have your expertise, but what I have found through my own research is that fees are snuck in there, and sometimes these fees can be very expensive. 1, 2, 3, 4% of your money can go to paying these fees. Is there a way for us to be better aware of what our fees are costing us?
Well, you know, everything's a lot more transparent right now. I mean, there's a new fiduciary rule out there where everyone, you know, wants transparency on Wall Street, and a lot of people don't understand what they're paying for. So, you know, with regards to ETFs, exchange-traded funds trade a lot cheaper than mutual funds, and a lot of people have some money in variable annuities where they're paying very high fees and are unaware of the, you know, what the fee situation is. Those fees, I think what you're alluding to, could be somewhere between 3 and 4%. And it really depends, because for some people it may make sense to pay the fee, because what you're basically paying for is insurance on your account for income purposes. A lot of people bought these variable annuities and paid higher fees because they were getting guarantees from the insurance company that they were going to outlive their income. And that's, you know, for a lot of people, that's very, very important. For other people that are in a good situation with their retirement, I'm not so sure it makes sense to pay such hefty fees of 3 or 4%, because, you know, it eats into the returns of the market. I mean, the market, the typical investor in the market right now might be at a 60% equity to 40% fixed income allocation. And if the market hypothetically was to do, say, 10%, 60% would get you somewhere around a 6% return, and you know, fixed income is not paying too much of anything right now. So if you're getting a net return of 6% and then you have all the fees, well, you're not walking away with too much. So I think that's what, you know, it's very important to understand, you know, what your fees are. If you can, you know, use different mutual funds or ETFs that are low cost, those are good to use. And if you do need the insurance and it's important for you, then, well, it may make sense to pay the extra fee.
Right, right. Andrew Ahrens, we're out of time. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to having you back again and talk more about our investments, our retirement, our money. Andrew Ahrens, thank you so much for stopping by.
Okay, Bert. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Good stuff there from Andrew Ahrens about you and your money, specifically your retirement. That 1 year, you work that extra 1 year or maybe 2 years or whatever, and all of a sudden you're getting a bigger return from your money. You know, you're getting possibly bigger payments from Social Security. That simple deal of saying they're 1 or 2 or 3 extra years can have a massive impact on your retirement. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it? Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we are back. Let's see. You know what? I just came back from being in Universal Studios last week, and I was very impressed. Universal Studios has really stepped up their game. It's been about 10 years since I've been there, but unbelievable, better experience. It was always good. I want to say they stepped it up. I want to say they were outstanding. The park was cleaner. The customer service level was better than I've ever experienced before. It was an awesome, awesome stay. So why am I talking about this? Well, it was a lot of fun. But also, the thing that I want to point out here is customer service and was kind of like the big thing. It wasn't any of the rides. The rides are always good. But it was the customer service that really put it over the top. Anybody can produce a good product, but if you have a good product plus great customer service, then you have something that people are going to talk about, right? I mean, look, the thing that customer service will do for you, outstanding customer service, is that it doesn't cost you more money. It doesn't depend on the size of your business. It doesn't depend on your technology. Anybody can deliver outstanding customer service. Period. If you think that by delivering customer service, outstanding customer service is going to cost you money, then you don't understand the value that's being delivered there, right? So let's just, for example, say that maybe your costs go up 5%. something nominal like that, you have to take in consideration that because you're delivering outstanding customer service, people are talking about you. Also, delivering outstanding customer service gives you the right, if you will, the privilege, if you will, to ask for referrals, right? Think about that. A lot of people are afraid to ask for referrals. Why? Because they don't know if their clients are happy. But what if you knew that your clients were happy? Then you're going to ask for customer referrals, and more importantly, you're going to get them. I mean, that's really what the whole point is. When you start talking about customer service, sooner or later, Zappos comes to mind, right? They built their business not on having the cheapest price, but on having outstanding customer service. Eventually, they grew to a multi-billion dollar company, and eventually they were bought by Amazon, who's also big on customer service. So if you want to up-level your game, your business, without adding a whole bunch of costs I think it'll reduce your marketing. I think it'll, if you do it right, you can get referrals. Just change your level of customer service. Survey your customers. Find out what it is they like, what they don't like. What can you do more for them? Any value that you can deliver beyond what they're expecting is going to wow them. And if you wow them, they're going to come back and they're going to tell their friends, and it just goes on. So think about that. What can you do to wow your clients? And believe me, usually it doesn't cost you anything, but if it does, the cost is so nominal compared to the return on that investment. All right. We have our next guest, Trip Elix. Trip Elix is a former hacker, former private investigator, and published author. His articles have appeared in daily and weekly publications all over the United States. He writes both novels and books. He also writes a blog that focuses on security and privacy issues at Trip Elix. That's Trip, ELIX.com. He regularly attends security conferences held by the Computer Underground, including HOPE and DEF CON, one of the largest hacker conventions in the world. Trip Elix, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you.
All right, so let's talk about your book. It's called A Right to Property. Is that right?
Yes, it is. And what a lot of your listeners don't realize is that, you know, the very simple logic behind this is that your name is your property. How could I take your name and say that it belongs to me? It defies every sense of logic, but all those companies that are out there stealing your information claim that your name belongs to them, that's impossible.
Okay, so are you saying, I mean, are you talking about black hat operations, for lack of better terms, people who are stealing identities, or are you talking about big data who are accumulating all this data?
Well, no, there's two sides to it. And first, you brought up the black hat guys. And there's a bigger theft of data going on every day by supposedly legitimate operations of corporate influence than hackers could have ever stolen in the history of the Internet. What I'm talking about is the bullying done by all of us by, for example, the banking industry and forcing us to put all of our information online, all of our accounts online. Your listeners are in the business world, and they've been sucked into and forced by the banking industry to make business decisions, not based on what's inconvenient and what costs them the least amount of money, but what's convenient for the banks. I mean, give you, for example, the latest iteration of PCI compliance that was written to force the actual business owner into adopting that it's their responsibility to be secure, not the banking industry to be secure, so that when fraud happens, it gets dumped on them.
Yes, and PCI, when I think of PCI, and you let me know if I'm on the right track, is, you know, if you are a merchant and you use merchant processing equipment, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, they require you to be PCI compliant. And it's first of all, it is one of the most useless exercises I've ever seen. And second of all, it doesn't protect anybody. And third of all, they charge you for it.
Yeah, they do. And this is the thing about PCI and compliance. Now, there's two different types of systems that business owners use. One, they use the little self-service terminals that you see in little gas stations where you slide your own card through.
Right.
One thing that your customer base should know is that hackers have gone into facilities when the owner wasn't there and swapped the equipment out that looks exactly like their equipment, but it was actually compromised. A couple of years ago, Barnes & Noble, the reseller, had this happen at, I think, 33 locations where a group went in and changed the self-service terminals so that when a user would, somebody slid their card through, the card was compromised. I'll tell you a little trick that they can do with their own equipment, and nobody will be none the wiser, and that is get a little bottle of nail polish and put a little dot in an indiscreet place on those terminals, and every once in a while, look at them. If the dot's there, then it's the original equipment. And don't tell your employees that you're dotting your equipment, or tell your manager to dot the equipment and to look at the equipment, see if the equipment's changed. Now, bigger systems that have back ends, like the restaurant industry and general retail, those systems have a bunch of different vulnerabilities, basically using Windows. That's the biggest one, but on those, what you do is, you know, I've watched the companies that actually sell these systems put them in a state that is not PCI compliant and scream up and down and swear that the piece of equipment is PCI compliant. Basically, compliance says is that that machine can only talk to the credit card processor. That means if you open a web page and you can go to Yahoo on the piece of equipment that's clearing credit card processes, it's not complete. It's not PCI compliant. And when you have a problem, you're going to have to pay. And by the way, the fine for not being compliant is about $500,000. So not only do you have the pain of losing because you got a virus on the machine, but you get whacked by the banking industry on top of it. So what you do is get yourself two firewalls. Most modern connections made by the cable companies or other providers give you more than one socket in the back of that unit, in the back of their little router thing. So get two firewalls and plug one into one into the other, and have your tech limit the communication of that device to only the credit card processor. And this is in the general PCI documentation that nobody bothers to read. And it's very easy to implement. I mean, you know, if you get down to the nuts and bolts in retail, I'm talking about a change that's going to cost them a little bit less than $100.
Yes.
But again, if they can pop a web page and go to Yahoo or go to Google on their cash register system, they got a serious problem, and that needs to be fixed.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, first of all, let's back up a little bit to the whole dotting of the equipment. The dotting of the equipment right there, in my opinion, is, I don't know, $100,000 strategy. Because let me tell you, if somebody was to come in and replace your equipment without you knowing about it, it's going to cost you thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. You know, who knows what the damage is going to be. Dotting your equipment and verifying it on a regular basis alone is a fantastic strategy that anybody can do. It doesn't take any technical know-how other than putting a dot on the equipment. It can't get simpler than that.
True. And the other thing that the industry is doing now, which happened in Europe a few years ago, is switching over to chip technology. I've written a couple newspaper articles about the chip debacle, because it's going to end up costing American business somewhere around $20 billion to switch over the terminals so that they can accept the chip. You know what the difference in the hacker world between the chip and the mag strip is?
What is it?
$50. It costs $50 to buy the equipment to write to a chip card, and the mag strip readers that, you know, like Square and PayPal give you for your phone,
right,
those allow you to, those actually are recorders and actually allow you to copy a card. The process of getting all this cell phone technology is what made the exploits of the mag cards so prevalent throughout the world. Half the little skimmers that are out there are the little device that we buy for a cell phone taken apart. Some of those companies were giving them away for a while.
Right.
So the parts are just out there. And this is what has fueled that side of the industry. The other side of it is, truth be told, the banking industry really doesn't give a rip. I mean, if they wanted to enforce and fix their system, you know what they use for enforcement? Our tax dollars. You know, the Secret Service is the one that upholds the monetary system. And it's our tax dollars that cover the banking industry because they don't care. One thing that your listeners should really know also, if they're in the business and they're accepting checks, if they have a four deposit only stamp that they use on their checks and it's got an account number on it, cut the account number off. The meth heads have discovered that if I walk into a business and I write you a check, and I'll write you a good check, okay, but I'm from a foreign bank. In other words, a bank that's not local in your little municipality. If I write you a check for $20 and you cash it, when that check comes back to me at my bank and I look at the back side of it, the Fed has stamped your bank account, transit code, and you yourself put your own account number. I can take those two numbers, stick them on Photoshop on a Photoshop check, write void on it, and walk it in to any place that sells checks and get a box of checks with your name on it or my name on it. Or better yet, what they'll do is they'll say, write payroll account and order a box of blue checks and then start writing fake payroll checks and taking them to the instant check cashing places. And they've done this over and over again. Last time, Kansas City, $400,000 by a group of five people.
Wow.
And that was a few months ago.
That's amazing. So, hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this real quick, because this is, I thought was interesting. Something I did not realize, but I wanted to talk about this, and that is the national background check system. You basically say that it's broken, it's not reliable. Talk about this a little bit.
Sure. Well, the actual, probably the best system in existence is the one that's run by the FBI, and it's closed, and it really should be open. The FBI system, by their own accounts, is about 55% incorrect, and it doesn't have every criminal in it, and it should.
Sure.
Further, additionally, that system should be opened up so that we, the people, know who the criminals are among us. We don't. And this creeps over to the gun control issues, selling weapons of any type to anyone. You're blind. You're relying on the word of, I mean, when you talk about background check, you're relying on the federal government to give you a background check out of a closed system that nobody monitors. If you want to pull your own FBI check record up because you get denied, it allows you to fix it if you're trying to buy a weapon. But other than that, you have no idea. Now, the data brokers. The data brokers are, they try to portray themselves, and big data tries to portray itself as, and the term big data, by the way, came from one of the data brokers. They made it, the psychology behind big data is Big Brother. That's why it was called that.
Right.
But Big Brother is more like Dumb and Dumber. They don't care who is associated to what. They're complete idiots. And there was a court case, actually, about a guy that was in, I believe, West Virginia, that was suing Spokio, that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and Justice Scalia dying is delaying the that court proceeding, or the actual decision of that Spokio case of using Porting Act in doing pre-employment screenings, because Spokio is not a recognized credit reporting institution. These background checks are completely unreliable, and there's no way for you to know when you apply for a job whether or not some data broker has got you for six DUIs. All you get is an answer back saying, no, I'm not interested in, you know, that position was filled. Now, your business relying on these things, they're completely not reliable. So what I would say to your to businesses is doing your own due diligence. If you are really concerned about an individual making an application to your business, hire a private investigator and do it the old-fashioned way. It's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks, but it'll save you in the back end. These $5 reports that are being sold are just crap.
All right, so let's talk about this real quick. Speaking of background checks, you were saying that traditional credit reports for employment are a bad idea. Why do you think that running a credit report for employment is a bad idea?
Because of a bunch of reasons. I'll tell you one, and that was that a while ago, I started tweeting about one of the credit reporting companies selling information. And
right.
I watched my credit report jump down and jump back in about 2 weeks. It's a complete arbitrary system. You may have a valid reason, but you're a hostage for your credit report. And the industry knows that you're a hostage. If you complain too much, well, your points drop. If you have a complaint with a company and you can't resolve it, oh, well, we'll just reduce your credit rating. This credit system that we have is a method of manipulation that really doesn't hold up on who a person is. And what's worse is that the pseudo credit is the culmination of what you post on Facebook, what you post on Twitter. So if you have an opinion the credit industry is now grading a person by what the opinion they have, what activities they have, what perversion of control is this? That's what I've got against the credit industry.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to find out who a person is, ask them, friend them on Facebook, okay? Friend them on Twitter. Look at their feeds. Ask somebody that knows them. You know, the old method of give me a reference, call the reference and ask them about the person. Is this
you know, I want to interject this real quick because we're almost out of time. I want to say in my experience, having consulted with, I want to say, over 1,000 companies, having been hired multiple times, when I was young, hired by different companies, and as a consultant, people will always ask me for references, and I want to say maybe 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 200 will actually check them out.
Right, right. And this is another issue, and that's the company and the HR people themselves, and there's no forgiving them. And, you know, at it, throwing money at it and pulling a $5 background check isn't going to help you either. You know what I mean? If you're not willing to do the job, then, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, all right. Trip, we're out
well,
of time.
My books, A Right to Privacy and Extortionware, A Hacker's Tale, are available on my website at tripelix.com, TRIPELIX.com. They're also available on iTunes, Amazon, or you can walk into a Barnes & Noble and just buy them.
I love it. I love it. Trip Elix, great stuff. Looking forward to have you back again. Guys, the book, A Right to Property, and the other one is called what?
It's called Extortionware, A Hacker's Tale, and it's a fictional story that I wrote about a hacker that gets caught into a human trafficking and extortion ring right here in the United States.
All right, good stuff there, Trip Elix. Thank you so much for stopping by. Good stuff there, guys. Just, you know, everything that he talked about might cost you a few bucks, but a lot of it didn't cost you anything. The dotting of the equipment won't cost you anything. But it may save you tens of thousands of dollars. Calling your references, again, doesn't cost you anything, may save you tens of thousands of dollars. TripElix.com, you can find out more about him. Remember, we appreciate you stopping by. I say this all the time, and I mean it. Without you guys, we would be nowhere. So I appreciate your input, appreciate your support on Facebook and Twitter. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.